Well, I couldn't do a show on KMBR in my return after 11 years without bringing this next guest on. We did so many shows in 2010 when the Giants won their first World Series in 52 years in San Francisco. We spent so many awesome nights together celebrating that year, and we were on KMBR throughout the whole October run. Marty Lurie joins the show. We couldn't have a show without you, Marty. How you doing?
I'm doing great, FP. It's good to hear your voice. And yeah, thinking back to 2010, and I remember when they won the World Series, and of course you and I were on that night. Someone sent me a CD of our show that night. It's terrific. And you left me for about 20 minutes. And I said, where is he? He was on the pitcher's mound drinking champagne. And that's where you were, and I was taking the call. So I remember that. But, you know, that whole run of 2010 was just unbelievable. And we did a lot of those shows together. And I was thinking about it today, and I'll just say this. You know, the Phils beat Cincinnati three straight. And Halliday pitched a no-hitter. And Hamels had a shutout. And next thing you knew, the Giants were playing the Braves, of course. And Brooks Conrad helped along the way. But that was a tough series. Tough series. Then the Giants met the Phillies. And, of course, Halliday, first game, here he is again. And Cody Ross goes deep twice. And, you know, the whole ride was magical. But we forget the tough games. There were tough games. Uribe with a sacrifice fly. Huff with the bunt. Renteria with a two-out, three-run homer against Texas. How about that? It really was a fabulous year, and I'm so glad we could do it together.
I think it came down to game 162 against the Padres just to win the division, right, if I'm not mistaken. And that was a tough series. The Padres choked big time. The Giants caught them. And I'll never forget doing that show with you, Marty, on the night the Giants won the World Series. The team was in Texas. We didn't travel, obviously. We stayed back. We were in the bunker.
That's right.
At then AT&T Park, I had a bottle of champagne. I asked Lee Hammer, I said, hey, if they win tonight, can I drink on the air? And I had never done that before, and it's one of my only rules in broadcasting is, you know, you don't want to dip your toe into that water because you might be good, and then you have to start doing it every night. But I had the bottle ready. I popped it on the air. We had a five-minute commercial break. I was just telling the guys this story off the air before we came on tonight, that I went and sat on the mound at AT&T Park and chugged the champagne. I drank it throughout the whole show, and I think I was super slurry, even more than normal when I'm sober on that show. So it was just tremendous memories the whole time. We went on the air, and I don't know, you just felt like the whole Bay Area and everywhere. I think Lee Hammer told me we had something like 12 million listeners that night when the Giants won the World Series.
Yeah, it was unbelievable, and I'm just glad you came back, you know. I mean, came back that night. I was in the bunker looking around and wondering where you were. But, yeah, it was an amazing, amazing night. And what I remember about the calls from everyone, you know, winning the first World Series, you know, in Giants, San Francisco Giants history, people were talking about how much it meant to them, their pets, their departed grandparents, parents. And it was just such a moment of connecting generations of people who had suffered with the Giants and, you know, had been there since 1958. And here was a World Series. And everyone had a story. And remember all the superstitions that people had. They'd cook certain meals and wear certain things and walk around the house a certain way. And it all came together for us that night when they called in and talked about it. I'll never forget that, what it meant to the families. And it was a Bay Area, really, a Bay Area magical night.
You know, that's the difference, Marty, between experiencing the World Series like I did in D.C. in 2019 and the one here in 2010.
I wanted to ask you about that. That was one of the things I want to ask you. What's the difference? The Giants World Series and, of course, the Washington, come on, it was exciting. And you were there right in the middle of it the whole way.
It was a fantastic experience. But the difference was, you know, there wasn't the generational thing in D.C. that there was here in San Francisco. And touching on what you just said, where, you know, my grandfather died and his you know, dream was to watch the Giants win a World Series, that he moved out from New York with the Giants, and I wish he could have seen this tonight. And we had people actually in tears on the air. Right. And we had people like, you know, you hear the stories about when the Red Sox finally won, going to the grave sites and bringing flowers. And so while it was euphoria in D.C. in 2019, a tremendous run by that team, and the town went crazy. You know, they didn't have baseball for all those years, and, you know, they have a team, and they got the team back. And it was fun It was incredible. The team was as hot as any team I've ever been around, but there was a lot of similarities in, like, you know, you get a Cody Ross that kind of energizes you. You get a Gerardo Parra that kind of energizes you. You know, nobody picks you in the playoffs. And so there was a lot of similarities. They were a wild card team, and, you know, the Giants got hot at the right time. But I think the difference was, for the first time in 52 years, a city that had been so close with such a tremendous fan base and filling up the ballpark every night, and they were so close, you know, with Russ Ortiz and Dusty Baker, and there was ghosts flying around from that, and to finally seal the deal and win a World Series and to hear the people's emotions on the phone. And granted, I didn't have a radio show in D.C., and maybe there was some stories like that that I didn't get to hear, but that's the beauty of radio, Marty. We got to talk to the people. Like, when you're a Major League broadcaster, you know, you're teaching, you're trying to coach on the air, you're trying to point out some things and educate a fan base that didn't have baseball for 30-something years. But to actually feel that emotion from the fans and connect with them, I mean, that's what's exciting about being back tonight, is I get to talk to the fans and people that I've missed for so many years, like yourself.
Yeah, no, you did a great job with it. You know, and thinking about Washington for a second, I mean, of course, they had the expansion Senators in 1961 that eventually became the Texas Rangers. And, of course, the Expos, which you were part of, moved down to D.C., and that's where they are now. But the original franchise, the last time they were in a playoff, I think it was 1933, something like that. And they played the New York Giants, and the Giants beat them in a World Series that year. So I don't think you're going to get too many calls from people who saw that. But, you know, it was a long time ago. But it really was a big moment for the city, because they had really suffered. Washington fans had suffered for years. You know, first in war, first in peace, and last in the American League. You know, that's what they used to say about the old Washington Center. So I'm glad you could be part of it. And, you know, you called some great shots there. And what makes you special on the air is your idea of strategy. And you understand it. And you can say when a guy goes first to third or when a bunt's going to happen, when they did do bunting or stealing a base or something like that. Your analysis of the game is really, really good. And I listen to you quite a bit. So we're lucky to have you back and just to talk some ball with you.
We're talking to baseball encyclopedia Marty Lurie and a dear friend of mine, and just how that 2010 season bonded us for life. We call, we talk to each other all the time. I bounce things off you. You call me. We stay in touch. I just had JT Snow on earlier in the show. Same thing. I played 1 year with him, and we've been friends for life. So I'm leaning on all my good buddies tonight. Yeah, that was that fantastic experience in 2010, 2019, same thing. Lucky enough to be on the air tonight and lucky enough to have you on. What is your thoughts on the current state of baseball? Very general question, nothing specific. I just want you to kind of like riff a little bit on where you think the game is at, and are they going to solve this thing and get back on the field?
Well, they'll solve it. You know, they're close enough, and written proposals are going back and forth, and maybe they want it in writing just so there's no mistake. So if someone tries to declare an impasse and they end up in court, at least they can say, look, here's our written offer. So I don't know if they're getting closer to settling it, but they certainly are putting things in writing, which I think is a good sign. Baseball has changed quite a bit. And it was interesting. I had lunch today with some of the writers. Barry Bloom was there. I remember him. And Steve Stone was there, and John McLaren, and different people like that. We try to meet once a month. And we're talking about baseball. And the stories of baseball and the books that are written about baseball, they're almost like Bible stories now. You know, the stories of players who played in the 40s and 50s and came off farms and, you know, things like that. The world was different then. The story of baseball now is more of analytics and young players and dynamic players. And the way the game is transmitted to the fans is the big difference. And look at today, Apple TV. Announced with Major League Baseball that Friday nights will be Apple TV night. And they'll have a doubleheader streamed on Apple TV, and that's what's going to happen on Friday nights now. So what's changed is the platform and the way the game is brought to the public and to different demographics and different people. And I think that's the biggest difference. So I think the story is still great. And what makes baseball different from all the other sports is the season really does matter. They haven't settled yet on how the playoffs would play, but I think winning a division should have a lot to do with it. But the story is a soap opera every day. And it's got, as I like to say, it's got all the elements of life in there. And once you hook into that soap opera, you can't wait for the next day. And thinking back to 2010, you know, there was Lincecum and the fabulous game he pitched against the Braves. And you had Matt Cain and then Jonathan Sanchez. And you had Freddie Sanchez with three doubles off of Cliff Lee. And you couldn't wait for the next day to see Uribe hit a home run or a sacrifice fly or Renteria take someone deep in game three. Actually, game five was a three-run homer. So I think that's where baseball is. And I think what's going to happen, I said this before, and I said it today at the luncheon, we have to get back to the stories of the game. And that's what the game was built on. And it was, talking to you, I mean, I could talk to you about Felipe and what he meant to you and what it was like having him on a bench and the things he used to say and where he came from. And even your story, coming from Sacramento, going to the University of Miami. What round pick were you? Weren't you like 30th or something?
20th round draft pick. Bonus 20th. Baby. Signed for $1,000. My seventh year in the minor leagues, Marty. Yeah, I was making $10,500 a year before taxes with the family.
No, those are the stories. Those are the stories that built the game. And, you know, and that's what we have to get back to and get away from spin rates. Not that they're bad, because it helps really scouting and helps you understand who the best players are and what you need. But we have to get back to the human side of the players and follow them day to day and know that, you know, Lincecum's going to pitch on Sunday. I'm buying a ticket to see him pitch. I'm not buying a ticket to see someone hit a 28-degree launch angle hit. You know what I mean? I want to see the player. I want to know the player. So I think baseball's got to go back to that to some degree. And I think that's the biggest thing for me. That's the biggest challenge is going back. And the game is slower. Let's face it, you know, and you broadcast so many games. You know, 3 hours, 10 minutes is a long game. And from the sixth inning on, you know, you get to the sixth inning in about an hour and a half, and the last three innings could take 2 hours. So I think with the world today, how things are delivered, I think you have to speed up the game somehow, and I'm not sure how you do it, pitch clocks, things like that. But I think it's more of getting a little bit more entertainment and giving people a reason to come to the park. There's whether it's games they play or seeing getting the food or just the ambiance of the park, you have to give people a reason to come out there. And that's what scares me about the strike. Is that, you know, inflation is happening, gas prices are going crazy. We look at the atrocities every night in Ukraine and pray that they can win and somehow, preserve their country. And then again, we say, come on out to the ballpark and spend, $200 on four tickets and three hot dogs. And I think baseball's got to get back to reality and making the day at the park something very special for people and make it affordable. And, you know, whether it's letting kids in for free, whatever it is, baseball's got to kickstart itself again. And I think that's the biggest thing coming out of this lockout. You got to kickstart it again. And maybe, you know, I'm going on and on here. You said riff. I did.
go ahead.
Maybe the thing is, and you've been through this, and I said this many times, you know, there's 200 free agents out there. And there's still some of the big names. They'll get their money, Freddie Freeman, Correa, maybe Trevor Story. Maybe he'll go back to Colorado. Who knows? But there's about 200 others. And once this thing gets settled, there's going to be 3 to 4 weeks of spring training, and you're going to have to find homes for like 200 players. And that's going to get the fans back into it as they try to rebuild their teams again. And I think that's going to help a little bit too. But that's one of the issues. Of baseball is dealing with the large free agent class that's out there right now. So that's my riff on baseball.
Fantastic, as usual, Marty Leary. Well, you're talking about selling personalities. When I tell new fans about baseball and how you get into it, that's too slow, it's too boring. I said it's a six-month reality show, and when you get to know the personalities, right, you want to flip on TV every night to see what somebody did in this episode, which is the game that night. And how would you fix that? You said we got to get back to marketing the personalities. I think baseball of all sports needs to vastly improve in that department.
No question. No question. And I said this today. You've got to promote the players like the NFL does, like the NBA does. And you've got to use the platforms that people go to get information today. And it's not enough, you know, we love NBC Sports Bay Area. Thank God they're here. But you got to deal with Apple TV. You got to deal with YouTube. There's so much on YouTube and Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook if you use that. You've got to find a way to get those players on those platforms so they become household names and we understand their stories. It's not enough. Baseball just can't sit back and say, sure, come on out to the park and, you know, see game 78 of 162. This is quite a pennant race. You can't do that anymore. There's too much competition. So I think the way you do it is to get back to the platforms that people look at today and promote the players through those platforms. Because it's not enough just to read the Chronicle online or, you know, go that way or NBC Sports Bay Area. You've got to have baseball in all these other forms, and Apple TV is a good start.
So you watched the 107-win Giants last year. I watched from D.C., so, you know, I have the East Coast bias now. I didn't stay up late enough to see the whole thing and experience it. Do you think they can repeat this year? A lot of people are picking them third, Dodgers, Padres, Giants, without maybe Chris Bryant, without Buster Posey, without Gausman. Can they do what they did? Obviously not 107 wins, but can they win the division this year? What's your thoughts?
Well, I think they absolutely can. And I have a lot of faith in the way they approach the game now with the 14-person coaching staff, with all the analytical information they have, breaking down swings, and that they got people to buy into it. The scariest part for me is, and you know this as a ball player, that ages, is that Crawford and Belt, and there's no Posey, they're the year older. And, you know, you've got to duplicate what they did last year, and they had career years really last year, and that's the toughest part. But they've got plenty of pitching in the bullpen, and baseball today is a game of bullpens, and he's probably got 25 bullpen pieces that he can use going back and forth to Sacramento. And, you know, using the analytics of throwing your best pitch at the right time. So I have a lot of confidence in the Giants. And I think the Dodgers are due to step back a little bit. I think they've got some pitching issues. I don't think Trevor Bauer will ever be back. Who knows what will happen with Kershaw. I don't think Bauer, will, as I say, he'll ever be back. They've got Dustin May, who's been injured. And they've got Buehler and Urias, and that's it. And then, you know, they haven't signed the big free agent yet. We hope they're not going to get Freddie Freeman. You've seen enough of him. Or Correa or something like that. So we'll see what happens with them. And the Padres are still a work in progress. They got Bob Melvin, which is fabulous, and he'll do a great job. But still, they're trying to unload Eric Hosmer and trying to figure out a way to, you know, bring someone else on, Freddie Freeman, and, you know, spend more money. But their pitching still, for me, is not where it should be, with Clevinger and Paddock injured. And you've got trouble with the Padres, I think, on their pitching staff. They've got Lamet. Maybe he'll be a reliever. So they've lost a lot of their starting pitching. So the Giants are pretty much intact and bring back most of the team from last year. And then again, we're still going to see some free agent signings. And I have one I want to ask you about. He may fit with the Giants, especially with the DH, and that's Schwarber. How would you feel if the Giants went after Schwarber?
He hit a lot of balls in the water, Marty. I'll tell you that right now. That guy's got some of the most pop I've ever seen from a left-handed hitter. And he gives you a good at-bat. He's an on-base percentage guy. He's a walk, strikeout, home run guy, just like baseball is in 2022. But apparently he's a good presence in the clubhouse, and he's a great guy. So yeah. I think he'd fit in good here in San Francisco. He's blue collar. He's like this town. I mean, he'd be great. Yep. He'd be a Giant. He is Giants baseball.
Yep. So that's a possibility for me. But, you know, they've still got a good defense. They're going to need a catcher. You know, Joey Bart's going to get the shot, but they're going to need someone to help out Casale if he re-signs. I'm not sure he's re-signed yet, but they're going to need some help there. But they're still a very solid ball club. And they play the game the way the game should be played today, and that is give me 5 innings out of the starters. If I have to use an opener a couple of times, I'll do it. And then that parade will start, and we can get it done. We can get the ball to the 9th inning, and they can do it. And I think I've got a lot of confidence that they could do it again. I don't see them, like, going, but, you know, last year they predicted 70 wins or 72 wins. They won 107. So I don't see them falling back to something like that. but they certainly are could be a 90-win team. And the way they play. Do you agree?
Absolutely. Well, I didn't see them play enough, Marty, so I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and try to fool the smartest baseball fans in the world. I don't know. I didn't see enough games. I hope they do. I love your positivity. I love your take on it when everybody else is picking them to finish third. And it's just a breath of fresh air to hear Marty Lurie on the Sports Leader. I feel like we're doing an old show together. I'm having flashbacks, and I can't thank you enough for coming on tonight and helping me out in my first show back on the Sports Leader in 11 years. How about that?
I love it. I think it's terrific. You know, as I say, you bring a lot to the table, the way the game of baseball is played today and the way you played it. And I brought up Felipe. Felipe had a big impression in your life, didn't he?
Yeah, a lot like you. He's the guy that stood up for me when nobody else would. And I told a story earlier in the show tonight about the lockout in the replacement player fiasco of 1994/1995. And, you know, Marty, he'll always be a special person in my life, not just in baseball, in my life. He taught me how to be a man on and off the field. So, Marty, we got to run. We're up against it. I thank you so much for coming on tonight. I will call you my friend tomorrow, and we will catch up even more. So it feels like old times with Marty Lurie on the Sports Leader. Thanks, Marty.
My pleasure. Anytime. Glad to have you back.
Marty Lurie on the Sports Leader.